Hello, and welcome to Introducing Me. I'm your host, Sarah. I started this podcast to get to know other people and lifestyles while discovering more about myself. Each episode, I will give a new guest a chance to discuss their background, culture, interests, or whatever they want to talk about to help increase all of our own worldviews. Today, I would like to introduce you to Hanan Marabi. She moved to the United States at 15 years old. After being born and raised in Ghana, knowing that she would someday return to Ghana to help others in need. She is now a mother, nurse leader, and founder of the nonprofit Earth's Angels. So Hanan is here to talk about her life, her experiences, and her nonprofit. So I'm happy to have her here today. So thank you so much, Hanan. Why don't you go ahead and tell the audience more about you?
Hi, Sarah, and everyone out there. Thank you so much for having me. As Sarah said, I'm Hanan Marabi. I am a nurse of 16 years. I started a nonprofit called Earth's Angels in 2012 with a mission to eradicate maternal and infant mortality, one mother and baby at a time. Currently building a fish farm in Ghana, in rural Ghana, that feeds people, provides jobs, and teaches sustainable farming. That's a little bit about me.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of things we can go to talk about just from those few facts. Why don't we start, because you mentioned fish farm and you did mention how it feeds people. If you want to like share a little bit more about what that means, what that was like getting it started, and is it kind of like where you grew up in Ghana or is it a different area?
Yeah. So Earth Angels started with a maternal and infant focus, and that still is our innate mission, if you will. When I started in 2012, and for years after that, I would take on different missions, such as providing aid to different hospitals and NICUs, maternity wards. We did, rewiring of electrical units in NICUs that had, problematic electrical systems and were in Ghana. We did some work in Punjab, India, several projects around the world and in the US. But in 2020, we got our first small grant from a California-based nonprofit called Empty Bowls. And with that money, the initiative had to be feeding focused. And so I then had to sit back and think, okay, what do I want to use this money for that will, for the first time, bring some sustainability back to the nonprofit? How can I bring some money back in so I don't constantly have to be, relying on my heart, my laboring to raise money, because it's the hardest thing you can do. And so I broke ground in a rural town, which is about a couple hours away from where I grew up, which was the city, Accra, the capital. And so it's a fishing town, sleepy town called Winneba. And I broke ground there 4 years ago and have been building a fish farm ever since. And so now it's about complete. We have a shoestring budget, very small nonprofit. So it's been slow, but it's been steady. And here soon we will be just about complete and be able to do the full amount of work that I envision us doing.
Awesome. And have you, been there at all for this groundbreaking to kind of like see the progress, or do you have plans to kind of do something in the future when it's kind of fully ready?
So I've been a few times since we broke ground, I think three in the 4 years now. I'm hoping to go this year, but I may not be able to swing it with all the myriad of projects on my plate. But yes, I've been a few times, and if you hear my dogs, forgive him. He likes to walk by me pacing back and forth. And so, yeah, I've been a few times, and I have boots on the ground, though. One of my brothers, so I'm the last of six siblings, and one of my brothers is a local to that town of Winneba, and he is my boots on the ground. He's the manager of the farm and keeps me up to date.
Okay. And mentioning your family there, did you all come over to the U.S. at some point, or like what kind of spawned you coming and becoming a U.S. citizen?
So no, as a matter of fact, I came alone. So my story is kind of nutty, Sarah. I'm Lebanese and Ghanaian mixed girl, born and raised in Ghana. My parents succumbed to easily preventable illnesses very young, due to the lack of some basic healthcare. So my mom died at 36, my father in his early 40s, I'm not quite sure how old he was, but early 40s, and I was the youngest of six. So I was orphaned at 8 years old and sent to live with a grandma and aunt, where I lived 4 years. I lived alone with them for a while, and then my siblings too joined when my dad died as well. At around age 14 or so, my grandma too was now ailing, and they needed a home for me, because my elder siblings, they had plans. They were going to school. Some of them were starting businesses. I was the youngest one that needed a home. And so, around age 15, I was adopted by some family and brought to the States alone, where I lived with them for the next 3 years.
And so the people that adopted you, are you like still connected with them?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, the 3 years was 3 years of hell. Really, really rough time for me. Instantly, the uncle that adopted me would make lewd comments. It was inappropriate, from the beginning. And his wife was, Cruella De Vil. And so it was just a Cinderella story. And after 3 years of that, I ended up running away. And I lived with some friends for about 6 months and then moved to California. I was in Houston at the time, moved to California, lived there, just grinded to put myself through school with some family. And that was the journey to begin my nursing school journey.
I appreciate, you being willing to share about that hard point in your life. And you've clearly, turned it around, had different successes. So what was it like working towards a nursing degree? Was that something, at age 18, you were like, I'm going to eventually get a nursing degree? Or how did that kind of come through since you've stuck with it since then?
I wish it was that seamless. No, at 18, one of my cousins stupidly advised me to take a year off school. He gave me this big talk about, if you take off a year, you can work and save some money and, you'll be older when you go back and you'll know what you want to do. Because at that point, I really wasn't sure what I wanted to go to school for. And so I took a year off, but that year ended up being such a difficult year. The cousins I was living with, including him, were in a really bad financial situation. And so next thing you know, I had to work like three jobs to help us pay the bills. I walked into an apartment that we were getting a notice that we were going to get evicted as soon as I moved in. And so it just sent me down this rabbit hole of just survival and grinding and working hard. I worked just about every job you can imagine. Sold door to door and waitressed, worked in bakeries, retail, you name it, everything to survive. And a few years of going to school and changing my major multiple times, mind you, I had no guidance, I had no parents, and these adopted parents were not parents. So I was just, making the best choice that I could, as informed as I could be. And so I started with communications, I went to psych, and then I had this amazing head and neck surgeon as an anatomy professor. And he brought in a real human cadaver for one of our classes. And it just made me fall in love with anatomy and the biology of the human body. And so I decided to go into nursing and I've been a nurse ever since 2008.
So then you started, being a nurse in 2008. In 2012, you started this nonprofit. So what was it like getting the nonprofit off the ground?
So the nonprofit, the impetus for the nonprofit, first of all, was my son, my first son, who I had prematurely. I had him at 7 months, couldn't feel him, had a gut intuition that he wasn't doing well, went in for a check, and 4 hours later, I had him, very traumatic delivery. And so once he came home, and you know, the thought kept plaguing me, what would I have done if I lived in Ghana? What would I have done? You know, he would have perished to this prognosis. And I certainly would have, you know, suffered some lasting ailments for sure, because I had preeclampsia. And so that thought plagued me incessantly until one day I said, you know what, I'm going to do something about this. I am going to help one mother or help one baby. And if I do that, then my mission is a success. And so just like that, I took a leap and started Earth Angels. And initially, you know, it was very quick that I realized that there is so much work to get it for nonprofit running. I mean, it took me a year and a half to become a 501c3, which is a legitimate nonprofit organization in the US. And, you know, I did that on my own, lots of research and applications, et cetera. And so to get that off the ground and then raising money, trying to get support of people in the medical field to wrap their arms around me and get some, you know, support as a no-name nonprofit was incredibly difficult. But it's been 12 years and here we are.
And have you found that you've been able to grow the nonprofit? I know you've talked about having different projects come through and you still have this main focus, but like you did get a grant. So what has kind of the last, you know, 12 years been like?
Yeah. So yes. And I have been able to grow it. Even though we're still small, we have accomplished so much. And, you know, our budget has been humble, but whatever we've set our mission to do, we've always done. And, you know, even if it takes a little longer, this fish farm probably wouldn't have taken 4 years, you know, if we had a heftier budget. But alas, you know, it's almost done. And so we have grown in different ways. And I think the biggest growth we made was going from raising money, donating a bunch of aid, you know, and I was doing a lot of that heavy lifting. You know, I have a couple board members, a few volunteers. So a lot of the heavy lifting's on me. And so the biggest growth was shifting from that sort of hamster wheel model to something with sustainability, something with longevity, something with a long plan. So even though it's taken us four years, the gifts are going to last generations and help so many people, not just feeding people, but we will, you know, the jobs that we have already provided is, you know, is incredibly helpful to the community of this fishing town. So that's the biggest way that we've grown for sure.
And so then you're running this and you have additional people, but all while still being a full-time nurse.
Yes. Yes, I am.
And being a mother. So how are you balancing all of that?
You know, Earth Angels is my baby, and it makes me so happy and so fulfilled that whenever I'm working on it, you know, I can work all day and then feed my kids, put my feet up and work on Earth Angels. And, you know, my partner will look at me like, put that computer down, girl, you know, like, because I would work nonstop because it's so fulfilling to me. I don't see it as work. I mean, kind of a corny answer, but that really is the truth. It just makes me so happy every time I get an update that we've accomplished. You know, we built a new tank and it's sealed and it's ready to be filled. It's like a big celebration for me. These are little wins that are all ones we've worked so hard for. And you know, I put my kids first, of course. And so they're older now, so they're a little more independent. I couldn't do as much of this. I couldn't do, you know, even Earth Angels to the degree that I'm doing it now. They're 10 and 13, so they're big boys. And so that helps with the balancing, as well.
And so then is this something, you know, are you planning on continuing staying in nursing until, you know, kind of retirement age?
You know, I don't think so. I think that I'm at a bit of a crossroads. I mean, nursing will always be, you know, stay with me. And it's been an amazing career, but I think I'm a bit at a crossroads where I am trying to catapult my speaking career as an inspirational speaker and work for Earth Angels, which has been totally volunteer up, you know, till now, still is. But eventually it would be nice to work full time for Earth Angels and speak and just do my professional speaking on the side. That's sort of where I'm hoping my career trajectory leads me. Mm-hmm.
And so are you right now in like general nursing, or are you like helping specifically like in the NICU? Like where is your field?
Yeah. So I left the bedside in 2017. So I was at the bedside. I did all things OB and infant care, nursery and neonatal care. But since 2017, I have been a business nurse. I've been working for an insurance company for these many years, and I'm currently a nurse manager. So I work remotely, which is another, you know, it's been very helpful with work-life balance ever since COVID. So I'm a nurse manager. I manage nurses and social workers to get the care for their members as best as possible.
Great. So you have this ability right now, you know, you're working remotely, your kids are starting to get older. Do you mm-hmm. ever plan to move back to Ghana?
You know, I have thought about it. I think that when the farm is bustling, like I envision in a few years, maybe when my kids are done with high school, I don't know if I would live there the whole year, but I definitely see me going and staying on the farm for X amount of weeks, you know, sort of a go and come, as we say in Ghana, go and come. People who live like that, you know, they go for a few months or a few weeks and come back. It would be nice to do that when I'm able to have that dream career that I just explained earlier. When I'm speaking and just working for Earth Angels, that would be amazing, especially if my kids didn't need me here every day. That would be sort of the dream end game. Mm-hmm.
And if you had the chance to bring your kids to Ghana to kind of experience some of that, like this is the city that I originally grew up in?
Yes. They've been a few times and they love it. They love going. I have a big family there. A lot of Lebanese moved to Ghana in the 70s and 80s due to the war in Lebanon. And so there's a lot of Lebanese, big Lebanese community all over the west coast of Africa, but certainly in Ghana. And so we have a big family there, lots of cousins. And so when they go, they're, you know, treated like royalty and they love it. They've been to, you know, we've driven by mommy's old school and my old house and all that stuff. Yeah, it's really cool.
And so then are you, with, you know, advances in technology, able to keep in touch with all of your family?
Yes. Things have changed in the past, you know, several years. I remember before having to go to the gas station, buy a phone card, scratch the back to call my siblings in Ghana, and it would be like $20 for 10 minutes. You know, so that's how we used to communicate. It was awful, especially when I was in the States by myself and all my siblings were in Ghana and Lebanon and I was alone. And to connect with them, I would, you know, have to, it was a lot of money to speak to them for a few minutes. Now, you know, we use WhatsApp. We have a group chat, all me and my siblings and I, we call, we audio, you know, everything is all part of the app. And so, yeah, thanks to AI, that whole dynamic has changed. You know, we can do video calls and see each other as much as we want. So definitely a game changer. Mm-hmm.
And what is the time zone change kind of typically for you all?
Yeah, typically 5 hours. They are ahead mm-hmm. of us in the East. I'm in the East Coast, so.
Okay, so that's not too bad to manage that kind of like, you know, for at least half the day, kind of regular hours.
Totally. And my brother, who I'm closest to, who lives there, he's up right now and it's 4:20 in the East Coast. So he'll still be up. Like we can chat most of the day. So yeah, it's really, really convenient.
Yeah, definitely. So then are there things, you know, because you have grown up, you know, your childhood was in Ghana, you then came to the States, you kind of had, you know, some rough patches here and there. But you have, you know, Ghana, you have Lebanese as part of your history, your culture. Do you celebrate? Do you celebrate those cultures in your day-to-day life living in the States?
Good question. Yes, some. I think as I've gotten older, I've sort of forged my own, you know, the traditions that mommy celebrates, because I sort of pick and choose, because I once was religious. So my dynamic as a kid was fascinating, because we lost our parents who were Muslim, my grandma, who was Christian, raised us. And so, you know, I went to church with her. She was Anglican, so I learned all the songs. I learned all the sit down, stand up things. And, you know, like, I grew up a little Christian girl. And then on the weekends, we'd go to my father's side, and, you know, they spoke Arabic and celebrated Ramadan. So then we would do that too. And so we were sort of, you know, born Muslim, but then practicing this sort of hodgepodge of everything, all Judeo-Christian. And then we went to an international school. So then we had kids from all over the world and got to really experience and taste all of these different cultures. So saying all of that to give you the idea to, it sort of has created me, which is all of these little things, you know. So I teach my kids about Ramadan. Right now it's happening. I let them know that, you know, so I don't have these big celebrations like I used to when we were kids, but I do acknowledge them. And, you know, if there was a celebration in Cartersville, Georgia, I would take my kids, but there isn't. So, so yeah, there are some things that I celebrate. And then when I'm back home too, of course, that it's so much more fun to celebrate because everyone else there does. It's hard to find that here. Mm-hmm.
And so then, are you kind of like, you know, you mentioned how your children, you know, when you go back and see family, you know, they're treated very well, you know, they're kind of the hot commodity. Are they, you know, are you raising them in any sort of way similar to how you were raised? Or is it very much this different, we are forging our own path, and this is like, the future is now?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. I mean, you know, you got to remember, I didn't have parents. Mm-hmm. So I was just sort of learning from everybody. I call it juicing, taking from everybody. You know, learning from my grandma and aunt who raised me with an iron fist and very strict. It was more learning what not to do. And then I would learn from loving parents of my friends when I would go to their houses, of what nice, happy, kind parents looked like. And then I had amazing experiences with my teachers. So my parenting is really my life. Like, it's, I have, you know, mothered my sons with the mothering I wish I had. That's the type of human being I try to be. I mean, it's just what I do. It's just my nature, is that I try to give you what I didn't have. If I'm a friend, I'm going to give you the kind of friendship I never had. That's the kind of mothering I give. And that's what that's what feels the best for me, is to love my kids with the kind of love I wish I had. So yeah, you can't compare. I mean, I was very poor. I had nobody, no support. I lived in fear every day. You know, my kids are free, and they can speak their mind, and they can ask questions. And I don't lie to them like I was lied to every day. I mean, I was told my mother was in London when she died. That's the kind of childhood I had. Everything was a lie, you know. And, you know, white lies were told to kids to protect them. And so I treat my kids like they have a seat at the table, you know, with everything in moderation. I don't overtell them things, but I do make sure they know their worth to me. So very different how I'm raising them. But I'm, you know, doing my best to raise men and not boys. So
yes, because one day they will be adults, they will be men. Yeah. So, you know, prepare them for those days. I'm sure you're not, you know, like wishing them out of your house, but it will come one day.
Yeah, it will.
So if you mind talking about it, you know, since you grew up without parents and you have this big family, this big network and stuff like that, the moment when you became a mom, especially since your first child was born early, like, was that hard for you in terms of, well, I don't even have my mom here to say, like, what was it like when you had me?
Oh my gosh, Sarah, you're going to get deep on me. You're going to get me deep now.
If that's okay.
Yes. So I missed my mother my whole life, of course. I mean, I lost her at 3, but I didn't miss her like I did when I had my first son. I felt so robbed. I felt so robbed. You know, I've always been told that my mom was this, you know, and granted, most dead people, everyone says kind things about dead people, but my whole life and by everybody, my mom was like this angel. And that's what makes it even worse, is that I was robbed of this amazing human. And so after having my kid, and I had him around the same time many of my girlfriends also had their own first babies. And, you know, they all had natural squat in the field type deliveries, you know, totally healthy, big old baby, went home with them, you know, no issues. And so I definitely grieved my pregnancy and grieved not being able to end it right and have a delivery that I imagined, like, you know, every woman wants, every person wants who's going to have a baby. But yes, it was really hard to see all the photos of all my friends with their moms and, you know, parents helping out, wrapping their arms around their kid and doing what they could for their grandkid. It was very, very painful. I mean, and yes, for people like me who didn't have parents, you're like, I'm just giving it my best, because there is no mom, or for me, not even aunties around saying, oh, you know, do this, or this is normal. Thank God I had a medical background. Thankfully, I was a mother and baby nurse. So I knew it all in terms of how to care for a baby. And I knew that I could shower them with love. So that was going to be enough for me. So yes, I got through it, and you know, and they're my best buds, and we have a really close relationship. But yes, to answer your question, it was incredibly painful having kids and her not being here, for sure.
Yeah, and was your second birth a little bit more of what you expected?
Yes, it was a normal delivery. He came home with me, and yeah, it wasn't traumatic. Thank goodness. Yeah.
Well, I know that some people, you know, they dream of, you know, having multiple kids, and then they have that first birthing experience, and if it doesn't go well, they're like, well, I did one and I am done.
And that's it.
So the fact that, you know, your second experience was better is good to hear.
It's funny, because when I used to be at the bedside and I'd be discharging, you know, moms after they had their baby, and sometimes they would say, or the dad on the way out would say, we'll be back soon. You know, I want 4 of these guys. And I would always laugh and say, you wait till you bring them home. You know, you want 4 till you have 1. Like, it's a lot of work. So yeah, thankfully I was able to have a normal delivery, and 2 is good enough for me.
Yes. Yes. They are a lot of work, as I have heard.
Yes.
So what is the plan for them? You know, we've talked a little bit about how, because they're older, they're a little more self-sufficient. You know, once they're kind of in high school, maybe you'll have more opportunities. Like, what yeah. are you hoping for them?
For them as men?
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping, when I pray for them, I pray that they will continue to be happy kids, and that they will be, you know, happy humans. I think to not lose your happiness as a human is really, you know, you've won if you can keep your happiness, because that is, I think, the hardest part about growing up is losing your happy. And we all start to slowly frown, and, you know, life is so hard. It really is. And so, I hope that by the time they're on their own, that I have shown them what brave looks like. They have seen their mother be brave countless times. And I think that's one of the biggest gifts I've given them, to know what brave looks like, to know what grit and perseverance, to not give up, to know that, you know, it's easy. We can all lay on the floor and give up, but to make your life worth something, you really have to stand for something, stand up, be brave. You know, pride is great and all, but being brave is really what you want to do. And if you're brave, then you're most likely making the right choice. And so I just want them to embody those characteristics most of all, and to find some things that they love doing. You know, one of my kids always talks about becoming a doctor, and I just always remind him, you know, that's amazing, but as long as you end up loving it, I'll back you 100%. You know, as far as what they do for careers, that's not what I think about at all. When I think about them as men, I think about just that they stay happy and kind, and be brave.
Yes. I mean, those are some great characteristics, and, you know, to kind of have that focus instead of being, you know, very career minded, I think speaks volumes to your parenting. In mentioning, you know, wanting to keep them happy, you know, have them continue on happy lives, since your life, like kind of earlier on, had some larger down points, did you have a point where you got to like, oh, this is what happiness is after some of those downtimes?
Oh yeah. I think why I made it is because I'm naturally a very happy person. I think that's one of the main reasons I made it. I've always had this big gregarious personality, always smiling for no reason, just always been innately, you know, a happy, I'm a Pisces girl. So, I'm just always seeing the silver lining. That's my natural, you know, I'm wanderlust. I'm a dreamer. I'm just naturally happy. So, I think my type of spirit always tries to see the positive afterwards. That's why I'm an inspirational speaker, because after everything I've been through, I tell people that there is silver on the other side, and that as long as you can keep taking that step, you will get through, you will come out of it. So I've always had this point of view, but look, I'm not going to lie to you and tell you that I'm just this fairy that's always happy. I call it my 9 out of 10 days, my 9 out of 10 days. 9 out of 10 days, I can logically explain to you like this, all the lessons that I know that I've learned from this life, all of the maybe even reasons some things happened to me, and that I have come to accept my pain as gifts. 9 out of 10 days, I can even say orphaned was the gift life gave me. But I do have my 1 out of 10 days where I'm like, you know what, I would trade it all. I would trade all the wisdom, all the knowledge, this great woman that I am. I would throw it all away to have my mother and have nothing else, you know. So I do have those moments. And in those moments, I allow myself to think all of those things and feel sorry for myself and cry and all of that. But then I always make sure I get up again and keep it moving.
Yeah, that bit of a reality check, I think, is...
Yeah.
Great to acknowledge as well. You know, when at first you were saying, you know, I'm inherently happy, it's like, that's like awesome from the background, you know, as you've shared, you know, to say, you know, kind of keep looking forward, see the best in things.
Totally. Yeah. I think I was just I hate the word blessed, because I feel like every time you say it, you're saying someone else isn't. But that is how I feel about my happiness. I feel like I was blessed with it. I was just sort of born this way. And it's really helped me cope, just being naturally happy and wanting to see the best in people naturally, and wanting to see the best of situations. Because otherwise, the other side, the alternative ain't so pretty,
right?
You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
So all this happiness, you know, surrounded by all of your life experiences, it makes sense, you know, that you have started this path on being an inspirational speaker. You've obviously shared some of your life today. When you are kind of going up there for a talk or being invited somewhere to speak your inspirational stories, what are those moments like, and what specifically are you focusing on in those moments?
You have some really good questions. you know, those moments for me, before I get on stage or before I do a talk of any kind, I always just I psych myself up and remind myself all of the things that make Hanan, and all of the things that brought me here today. I remember that nobody's better than me and that I deserve a seat at the table. And these are things that I share with others too, to remind them that, that they too can. And so usually I'm a little nervous before I get up there because, you know, I think that's just normal. But as soon as I'm ready and I'm like feeling my Sasha fierce, as Beyonce says, I'm ready to go. And I just, you know, I feel all of my life's experiences sort of ready to share with the audience, like ready to help that one person out there that's going to be like, you know what, Hanan, I was feeling like crap. I heard your story and I thought, why couldn't I do it too? And I at least get a handful of those types of comments every time I speak. And that's why I do it, because, you know, my story resonates and is different because, you know, there was no swooping hand that came through to say, hey, Anen, oh, you're 18. Oh, gosh, let me help you. No, as a matter of fact, the wolves all came out of hiding. You know, there was no knight in shining armor, no hand that came and saved me. It was, you know, pulling myself up with the bootstraps and knowing that I could do it and believing in myself and self-belief, all these things that I give talks on about how you don't need the support and the push of anyone else. It's nice to have, but I'm proof you don't need it and that you can make it and that you will make it. You just have to believe. I mean, that's what it comes down to. That's how people end up surviving without food for 3 weeks, you know, like for a couple months. How did they make it? Because they believed they would. That's really why they made it, you know? So I hope I answered your question. It's kind of, that was another deep one. So it took me a minute.
Yeah, no, you definitely did. And, you know, to be so long without supports and to get to where you are today, do you have good supports now?
I do. I do have a really full life now, very rich life. My fiance is incredible. My kids are incredible. I have a handful of ride or die friends that, you know, would do anything for me. My siblings and I are super close. You know, we are our mom and dad. All of us are, you know, are each other's mom and dad and have been all of our lives. You know, and I have a huge Earth Angels community that supports me and the nonprofit. So yes, I do have support now and lots of positive. I surround myself with positive people. I do. And I, that's part of my advice to others is to try and do the same because man, misery likes company, you know?
Yes. Well, it's awesome to hear that, you know, you have all these people in your life at this point, you know, your story has really shown one of resilience. And so I commend you on all of that. Now, before I start to wrap things up, is there anything else you would like to share with the listeners today?
Maybe because when we give my website, thelegacyisme.com, which is my speaking page, I do like to share where that came from and why. That's, you know, one of my talk titles is The Legacy Is Me. And so I do like to share that little piece with the audience. And if this is the one time you hear with me the most, I think it is probably the most inspiring of all the things I've shared. So when I was little, the aunt that raised me, she would say some really vile, wicked things. And one of the things she would say all the time was, you know, kids, remember your parents left no legacy behind, just so you know. They left no legacy behind. They left you guys nothing. And it wasn't until I was a nurse for many years, I was working night shift and I had this catharsis. I had this amazing week where like friends came through for me and just lots of back-to-back like wins happened in my life that week. And I had this catharsis in the middle of my shift that, wait a minute, they left me behind. I'm the gift. I'm the legacy. The legacy is me. And that was, you know, years ago. And since then I've trademarked it. It's become like the center point of my speeches. And what it means is that you can break the shackles that hold you. You can author your own life. You can come out of whatever trauma that you're experiencing, if only you're ready to, and to self-believe. So that is a little extra dusting of inspiration I wanted to share with your audience.
Ah, I think it's a great piece to share, you know, kind of show, you know, how you've gotten to where you are, why you say what you say. So I appreciate that here at the end. Now, at the end of all my episodes, I do ask my guests a random question. So my question for you today is, who is the most famous person you have met?
Most famous, Kurt Russell, I would say.
And how did you meet Kurt Russell?
Kurt Russell, I was in Ventura, California, and they have an outside mall, like a really beautiful mall. And he was out there walking like he'd been shopping, and he was really sweet. He walked by and gave me a cute smile and said, hi. I think he is the last one. Yeah. And probably most famous.
All right, that brings this episode to a close. So of course, if you'd like to connect with Hanan, we'll have some information in the description for her. So her website that she mentioned, legacyisme.com. So if you want to check out, you know, kind of her speaking career and stuff that she has going on, also be leaving her TikTok. That is the social media that she is most active on. And I'll also be leaving a link for a little freebie that she has, which is kind of an ebook. There's an unlisted YouTube video. So if you want to check that out, that will be in the description. Of course, in the description, as always, is our website. So that brings you to all of our past episodes, past resources, all those good things, along with our social media. We are on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And of course, in the description is my email. That is the best way to reach me if you would like to share your story on the podcast. And there is also a link if you would like to support the podcast monetarily. That is always appreciated. So thank you so much, Hanan, for spending time with me today, and to my listeners for taking the time out of your day to hear a new story. Until next time, bye.
Bye.